admit I'm tired.
All right, go ahead and flash the two, ladies and gentlemen. Hour number two of the Doug and Wolf Show, Savages in the Morning, broadcasting high atop the bell tower of the Auction Community Studios. We say good morning to you, brothers. You made it. There you are at the finish line. It's Friday morning. Time to get up because the party's not going to be the same without you. Isn't that right, Craig? Watch it. Everybody's working. Ah, it feels good, does it not? A momentous morning. Isn't that right, Bobby Hurley?
Whenever the last Doug and Wolf Show takes place, your brother has to come on the show. Has to.
No, let's just keep that a secret forever. You want a piece
of my heart? Oh, I tried to time it so I'd miss Loverboy.
Dang it! Paul, you've got to know about something that's coming up today at 7:45. At 7:45 this morning, with all due respect to Maloney, who did do a little bit of work on this, but the show was produced by somebody else.
Oh, okay. You outsourced it today because it's a Friday. Nobody wants to work around here.
There's a Doug and Wolf listener, Twitter handle, at Nathan Kropp, who was listening to the three of us talk yesterday. I think it was yesterday. About the draft. And about Steve Keim, who at one point in his tenure kind of shifted into the, I want the athlete, let's move, you know, okay, of course I want you to be smart and know football, but I'm not going to keep a guy just because he's smart. That doesn't help me much. And then it did seem like there was a little level of accountability gone. There were less guys lined up in the right place, blah, blah, blah. Different mental errors kept happening. And I brought up Rashad Johnson. And what that means that maybe Rashad's guy is going to be better than Rashad, but your 11 guys together will be better than their 11 guys when you have someone like Rashad Johnson. Well, at Nathan Kropp tweeted Rashad and told him we were talking about him. And Rashad tweeted back and said, I'll come on with my guys anytime they want.
Oh, nice.
So he's coming on at 7:45 this morning, the former safety of the Cardinals. But here's what you need to know, Ron or Paul Calvisi, and that is, he's also working his way up the ladder as a coach with Alabama football. And one of his duties, which I've never heard from a part-time coach, is a sideline reporter on the Bama radio network.
So he's a coach / sideline reporter.
He'll have
he's like a GA, and he'll have some duties probably, I'm guessing, we're going to ask him, in like, you know, there's an actual personnel department with the Alabama football team.
Sure.
Now other schools have it too, but this was the first thing that was done by Nick Saban, and I'm guessing he's doing things in that realm. And then he's an intern coach on top of it.
Well,
but he's also getting paid to be the sideline guy. So we'll find out all the details at 7:45.
I believe he's still the only player in the history of Alabama football to be a walk-on who became a two-time team captain. So here's a guy who's used to sort of forging his own way and creating his own job and just coming in and taking something and earning it. And Wolf, don't let that be a precedent for you. As many years as you've tried to be a coach while you've been on air and have failed, don't think that paves the way for you.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Paul. I'd never be a coach.
But it does
because
bring
I've
up...
already tried to be a coach. And you know what? Honestly, it was the worst head coach in the history of junior college football.
It does bring up something for Steve Keim, though. Okay, where is he at going into this draft? Because there's been some different, you know, ups and downs in Steve Keim. And I just mean that philosophically. We're not talking about success versus failure. The idea of, no, I'm not going to take a character risk chance. Then he nails Tyrann Mathieu. And look how that went. And then he says, maybe I'm going to be a little more open to trying some other ones. And then he hasn't really stuck his neck out that far on different scenarios. You have the smart guy into more of the athlete, now probably back into a guy that can handle making adjustments faster. You know, there's been ups. Where is he at now? As he goes into his most important offseason in the history of this franchise, from an Arizona standpoint.
Don't know how to answer that one, Paul. Doug, sorry. All right. But I will say this right here, that he's got to have a strategy to rebuild. You have to have a strategy. And that's exactly what I want to talk about, is the fact that you've got to have this strategy to rebuild this team. And job one, when you have a strategy to rebuild and win games, it's you need to turn Josh Rosen into a franchise quarterback. That's job one. That's your strategy. You need to turn Josh Rosen into a franchise quarterback. You need to fix the rush defense. That's job number two. And I think you need to solidify the special teams and the skill positions in particular on the special teams and what's going to happen there. The strategy.
Well, you got the special teams coach for once, so you're fine there.
The strategy is something that you have got to build from the inside out. It says what you are going to do. Job one for the Arizona Cardinals is to turn Josh Rosen into a franchise quarterback. So now, after you declare that, you have to say, how are we going to do that? Well, I'll tell you how. You're going to hire Cliff Kingsbury, number one. That's what you're going to do, and that's what they have done. You're going to fix the offensive line. How are you going to do that? You're going to go out, I would imagine, to get a couple of free agents. I'm thinking two free agents that you'll go out and you'll get. Guys that could be a difference, make a difference on the offensive line. I think number two, you're going to make Dirty Dave. You're going to make him the focal point of that offense once again. It's one of the reasons why you went out and you brought in Cliff Kingsbury, right?
Isn't that interesting? We're going to run the air raid with the focal point on our running back.
Even though we assume he's
going to be lined out.
It's going to look an awful lot like what you're going to see the Rams do on Sunday, ladies and gentlemen. That is what I think you're going to see the Arizona Cardinals kind of try to regurgitate. And then you got to bring in two more wide receivers. You got to bring them in. One, I would say, via the draft. And right now, we keep talking about, oh my goodness, would that be great if N'Keal Harry was there at number 33? And the Arizona Cardinals could go out and run to the podium and draft him at number 33. That would be unbelievable right there. But I think you also have to bring in a free agent, a guy that is a proven wide receiver in this league who's not named Bryce Butler. I think you need to do that. And then, to me, that means you need to go out and also get a Mike linebacker. Get a guy that you can put in the middle of this defense, a Mike linebacker, and then I think you're done. That's your tactic.
You listed 10 things.
Well,
I think you're done.
You know,
well,
it is.
Look, you're picking number one for a reason. There are a lot of needs.
Yes.
It's not just wants. There are needs right now, but it all revolves around Josh Rosen. It's the primary reason that Cliff Kingsbury was hired. And I think you have to restore his confidence. And yes, that goes with fixing the O-line. Yes, that goes with getting him some more weapons on the outside, the ability to go downfield. But you have to develop his own skill set, starting with the accuracy, I believe. You really have to see if you can make some strides in that area. It wasn't just missing receivers at times. It was not putting the ball on the money in stride. How many guys this year caught the ball in stride? Too many times guys had to halt their routes or get out of the rhythm just to turn and catch a ball, and then yards after catch were minimal because of that. These are things I'm curious, if you want to talk about a plan, what they're going to implement to try and improve that.
I don't think he was very confident in the offense, right? I don't think he was very confident in Mike McCoy's offense. And then all of a sudden he had a complete paradigm shift when Byron Leftwich became the offensive coordinator, right? And I do know that they were still using the same terminology, and I understand that, Paulie, but I think that messed him up even more. I think Cliff Kingsbury is going to try to restore that confidence. And again, when you're talking about some of the concepts of the air raid, it's about simplifying the quarterback position as well, and maybe that will make him more confident.
I got to tell you, though, real quick, one thing that was interesting at azcardinals.com, there's an article about what Steve Keim plans on doing, and he declares that he has control over the 52-man roster.
You're 52.
He says, I have control over 52 players. He said that Michael Bidwell controls Larry.
I see.
That he said he went back and forth and had some trouble negotiating the contract with Larry, but Larry has a hard time saying no to the boss. So it was Larry and Michael who finished the deal.
And Larry negotiated his own deal.
That is cool, isn't it?
He doesn't have an agent. And so it's Larry Incorporated right now. Between negotiating his own deal and going to Harvard for the business classes, he's aspiring to be the next business mogul out there. He's going to be the next Magic Johnson to go from playing career to ownership somehow.
Tried to take him on. We'll see how it goes. Coming up next, for the first time since I remember them winning a first-round game with James Harden, ASU is the number one story of the morning. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Good. I just want to let this breathe for a second.
Of course.
So I remember ASU. I couldn't remember who they beat, to be quite honest. I went out and cheated and talked to Vince all things Sun Devil. And Vince took 8 seconds and said Temple. But the last time I remember ASU being the number one topic on the Doug and Wolf show was ASU advancing to the second round in the sophomore year of James Harden, and then Harden laying a complete egg against Syracuse in the second round. I don't know why, but off the top of my head, it just popped in. I think that game was in Miami. If you're an ASU fan, feel free to rip me.
Okay.
I don't know why the location of the game just popped into my head, but I think I remember it being in Miami, in which I couldn't remember that they beat Temple, so Vince had to help me with that. But they lose to Syracuse, and that week we talked about ASU a lot. And other than that, you know, a lot of the topics on the Doug and Wolf show are kind of determined by you. What are you watching on television? We have exhaustive research that shows what our ratings do when we talk about different topics.
Yeah.
And we go by your ticket sales. What are you buying tickets to go see? That tells us what you care about.
It's a science, my brothers.
And it's been a long time since we said ASU basketball number one. And today, ASU basketball number one. The place was unbelievably electric. It was...
You were there, Douglas.
The thing that shocked me more than anything else, and I'm ballparking it, I'm not good at just guessing and throwing out numbers like this, but I'm going to say there was only about 100 to 150 U of A fans in that building.
Boy, that just seems...
And I remember going there where there were sellouts, and it was 50-50. You know, and maybe even worse than that if you're an ASU fan.
Wow.
And it was gold everywhere in that building. And then to see Cheatham put up 22 boards, his second 20-rebound performance in the month of January.
Man, I mean, for me personally, growing up here and just seeing pretty much, I mean, there's no really other way to say it, the dominance that U of A has had over our program. For me to come back home and my first ever territorial game and come out victorious, it means a lot to me.
I have to start with this, ladies and gentlemen. What a huge win this is for Bobby Hurley and the Sun Devils. I have to start there. The Devils cannot abide losing games in the Pac-12. I mean, other than UW, the conference is pretty tepid. The team that lost last night's game was going to be in a very difficult spot, and the U of A, they wake up this morning, ladies and gentlemen, with a harsh realization, and it is hard. They don't appear to be a tournament team. And it's interesting, going into the game, you had Sean Miller saying he didn't think they were a tournament team.
That was such an interesting comment.
That was, right. Well, I think he was probably more than anything else was trying to jab his team.
Yeah.
The desperation, my number one takeaway, other than the fact that Wells Fargo was on fire, my number one takeaway was just, oh my goodness, this is not the NBA. And again, I don't mean to attack the NBA in any way, shape, or form. They play 82 games. I understand it. Okay. You're getting paid an awful lot of money. You're not going to be as desperate as these college kids in a rivalry game. But oh my goodness, did you see the effort and the intensity from both teams last night? It wasn't just ASU.
I admit to you that, you know, in the long history of this show, you know, you and I have never wavered on this fact that you have always gravitated to the pro game because of the skill they play at.
Yep.
I've always been the college guy for the exact reason you just gave. I love seeing that effort. That's what draws me in to see, wow, you care that much. That's why I have such a hard time when I watch DeAndre Ayton, because the young man just drips with talent and he doesn't have that yet. And very, very few people have ever grown to develop that level of desire. I hope he does. I really want to give him a big break, because when you start the game at 12 and your life isn't based on competition and then the game starts to come easy, I think it's going to be a while. This is the first time in his life, wow, this game is hard. So now how are you going to respond now? So yes. I want to give the kid a break. But man, last night, how many times Coleman drove the lane, that the heart and soul guy that he was, and then the Cheatham rebounds.
Oh,
and when you're there,
goodness.
Cheatham is not a guy that's a that's something like 230 pounds is going to throw people around or something. He just cares more. He goes underneath and cares more than everybody else that's underneath. And then for just little things, Cherry in this game comes out of concussion protocol, runs down the court and takes a charge.
Right.
I mean, little things like that. Like, yes, that's why I love the game of college basketball.
Just the incredible intensity that was shown over there. And Bobby Hurley got his first win over the U of A in 4 years. Think about that as well. 0-6, Douglas. 0-6 got his first win, and it went into overtime. Are you kidding me? Just the intensity, the effort, tapping into the rage tree, baby. What a huge win for the Sun Devils.
I don't know if you as a fan went through a range of emotions. I never had a doubt, even when they were down by six and started to fall away a little bit, I never had a doubt ASU was going to lose until the last play of regulation. The last play of regulation for ASU was so bad that I thought that's right. The kind of thing where you start looking at each other and think, what just happened here?
Are we going into overtime now?
Is and then right? The other team comes away with a win. I mean, that was such an atrocious, and there's no way I believe that was a Bobby Hurley design. And Bobby Hurley said we had a mental breakdown on the play, and I'm going to guess Lou Dort had no idea what he was doing.
Okay.
Because there's no way the play ends that way.
What has happened to Lou Dort, by the way?
I don't know.
I mean, honestly, what has happened to Lou Dort? He looked like an All-American. I mean, this guy
it's was a great question.
Lighting it up.
What? I am hoping what teams have realized is just sag, 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 and say, we're all five involved in taking the drive away from you, hands mm-hmm. in the passing lane so he doesn't get a pass cutting to the basket and force him to beat you off the dribble or with a jumper, and that young man cannot do that. The other flip side, and this is the bad flip side, the first point I made is positive. The negative is he read the press clippings, thinks he's already there, and is just going alone. I hope that's not the case because he's not there. I mean, he has got to realize where are your strengths, mm-hmm. and he keeps playing to his weaknesses right now.
And ladies and gentlemen, how about the performance of Remy Martin? Remy Martin was off the hook, was he not? He was so entertaining, so incredible to watch, hair and all. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not like I sit around and watch Sun Devil basketball ad nauseum. I do not. I'm here to tell you that right now. I don't have time to do it. I do not. Hey, I do watch games.
I don't either. I've missed two games.
Yeah, right. Douglas is huge on this, right? But I can tell you right now, I've never seen Remy Martin play better.
I haven't either. Yeah.
How about the two-handed slam from Remy Martin in the first half, right, on the break? The two-hand dunk by Remy Martin. Oh, my goodness. Did Dave Pasch and Bill Walton go nuts? They list him at 6 feet tall, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if Remy Martin is 6 feet tall, all right?
Jeter turns, spins, steps under, foul. Shot smothered, and the loose ball picked up by Cheatham. Ahead it goes to Remy. Martin dunks it. Remy Martin with the two-handed throwdown off the takeaway by Zylan Cheatham.
That was absolutely awesome right there. And then again, Remy Martin just hit big shot after big shot after big shot, threes, drives. Every time he touched the ball, I thought, what are you doing?
And yet,
what are you doing? No! Oh, Remy! Yes!
I thought the biggest change in the momentum of that game was I'm ballparking the time about 7:50, 7 o'clock, 7 minutes left in the second half, and all of a sudden he hit about three or four straight no look passes into the paint where Sean Miller was just incredulous, like how are these guys getting that open?
Right.
But boom, he saw them and he got rid of the ball so fast. It was fantastic fun to be at that game. I mean, Tempe's got a long way to go before we declare it college basketball town. U of A has a decade to go before you declare U of A dead in college basketball, so it's just one game. But wow, it's a game that doesn't hurt U of A that much. It really doesn't, other than your pride if you're a U of A fan and you have to go to work today. But it was a have to game for ASU because you do sit there and wonder, why is Bobby Hurley 0-8 mm-hmm. if they lose? You do wonder, why can you not get this done? And I think it would have squashed any at large bid. I think it would have taken ASU and said, thanks for your win against Kansas. This is now a race. Not because U of A's bad, but it's just if you can't even beat your rival at home and you've already had a bad Princeton loss at home, we're done. I mean, there's a chance the Mid-American Conference could have more at-large bids than the Pac-12. Yeah. It's that bad in this conference. Mm. Coming up next, we go live to Atlanta to talk Super Bowl with our own Doug and Wolf NFL insider, John Clayton, on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Doug and Wolf.
Giving you inside information on the NFL every week.
Dude, what's happening?
NFL insider John Clayton.
Mom, when's dinner?
Joins Doug and Wolf now. Brought to you by Courtesy Chevrolet. Serving the Valley for over 60 years. Number one for a reason. Visit CourtesyChev.com.
ClaytonFootball.com is on the road in Atlanta as John Clayton joins us now. The Doug and Wolf NFL Insider live from Super Bowl 53. John, what was the first Super Bowl that you ever worked?
Super Bowl IX. It was in Tulane Stadium with the Vikings going against the Steelers. A game that I think Elsie Greenwood batted down four passes from Fran Tarkington, and just the defense totally dominated that game.
Johnny, awesome, you know what? You have been to so many of these things, right? How weird
is... A mere 42.
That's right. A mere 42, exactly. And, of course, it's always a little weird. It's kind of a circus environment. How about this one? How weird has it gotten there?
Well, yeah, I mean, this one's pretty calm. I mean, there's been some crazy ones. I mean, particularly, you go to, like, L.A., and you're on a bus for, like, about an hour or so. It's actually 2 hours, 2.5 hours every day. But, you know, there's just been – what's great now is maybe because of the quarterbacks, the games are closer. I mean, you go back in the 70s, you go back in the 80s, and they're all blowouts. I mean, there was not a single competitive you go years without a competitive Super Bowl. But I think what's great about these is that, you know, they're three-point game, comeback games, and all that stuff. For whatever reason, it's worked out. So now these Super Bowls are so much better than what we had for about the first 20.
Gary Bettman is on a different level, so he doesn't count. But I feel like Roger Goodell is the most hated commissioner I've ever seen from the fan base. And again, Gary Bettman's just different. He's on a cloud all its own. But I'm wondering, is he always going to be safe? Do the owners hear at all the way their fan base feels about Roger Goodell? Do they care about that?
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, in baseball, they put up a butt ceiling. So it's like, yes. And they did give him a $40 million extension. Now, I mean, this is not like a Jason Garrett situation, but, I mean, this is going to be it. I mean, they gave him a final contract. I mean, once this contract runs out, I think, 2023, that's going to be it. But also, they realize he generates revenue.
Yeah.
I mean, they're at $15 million right now. They're on pace to get $25 billion or so every year in revenue. And then, of course, now the revenue is increasing because of the gambling stuff, all the casino stuff. And that's something that Roger Goodell, the owners, didn't like. But, yeah, he's unpopular, but not with the cash book.
Johnny, as always, there's a lot of storylines going into a Super Bowl, a lot of storylines, and this Super Bowl is no exception. What do you think is the biggest storyline of Super Bowl 53?
I think the biggest storylines, I mean, I know, like, there's so many big deciding factors. I mean, one of the big storylines, what happened to Todd Gurley? I mean,
yes.
Gurley's healthy, yes. We presume.
That's a great point.
But again, the best running back in football, the potential MVP of the league, MVP last year, I mean, he's been benched. And so what's going on with him? You know, you got Tom Brady in his ninth Super Bowl standing there, you know, trying to be the underdog and trying to make everybody believe it's like, yeah, everybody's out to down us and all that stuff. That's kind of weird. All of a sudden, Ndamukong Suh has emerged after kind of an average season of doing nothing. I mean, he knew if he wins two playoff games, he wins $1 million. He made $14 million this year. And then you come back and you get the fact that, his dominating play has only happened in two games. Can it continue into the third?
John Clayton, the Doug and Wolf NFL insider, live from Atlanta, talking about Super Bowl 53 with us. John, Wolf and I aren't having an argument over it. Wolf and I aren't like saying that this is that neither of us are right, but a small disagreement, you weigh in on it. He kind of looks at Super Bowl 53 and says, Rams win, it shows the offensive revolution is here. And then Patriots win. No, wait a minute. Slow down the revolution a little bit because the fullback is still here. You can still win in old school football ways. And I'm on the opinion the offensive revolution is here whether the Rams win or not. If the Rams lose, it'll still be, well, the Rams will just win next year. Like, it's already happened. Where are you in the result of Super Bowl 53 affecting the future of football?
Well, I hate to say this, Wolf, but I'm kind of going on your side because I think that what you're seeing is that, I mean, you've got young versus old. And, of course, you've got two decades of game plans, two decades of all the different things it can have. And, like, for example, I mean, the old school thing of going with 41 plays with a fullback, doing wham blocks with Rob Gronkowski. I mean, it's like, that's Bill Belichick. But I was talking to Christian Fourier the other day, and, you know, back in 2004, you know, they had been pretty much a two tight end, physical blow them out type of theme running the football. Yeah. Then they get to the Super Bowl. He gets to Wednesday, 2 weeks, Wednesday 2 weeks before, and all of a sudden what he's doing, looks at the game plan, he says, wait a second, we're not even involved in the game. Tight ends weren't even involved. So it's like, you know, you can think, and we think they're going to go running the football, but with Bill Belichick, I mean, he could go to a three-receiver offense and surprise everybody. And, of course, now you've got a 66-year-old coach in Bill Belichick, a 33-year-old coach in Sean McVay, and, you know, of the two, who's going to make more mistakes? It's probably going to be Sean McVay because this is his first Super Bowl. He's going to be back for more, I would have to imagine. But, again, you're right about the old school and the new school and all that stuff and the fact it's running versus all that stuff. I mean, I'm just amazed because that's the first person I sought out here at the Super Bowl was Dante Scarnecchia. And Dante basically said, hey, we've been able to do this stuff now for two decades.
He's the great offensive line coach for the Patriots, right?
Yeah.
Yes. You know what, though, Johnny, as you're walking around and talking to people, what is the consensus? What are a lot of these people that are in the know? I'm not just talking about fans. I'm talking about a lot of people that are in the know. What's the consensus here? Is there one forming one way or the other? Who's going to win the game?
It's back and forth. I mean, it's 50-50, I think.
Wow.
Because, you know, you think about this. Patriots have won five Super Bowls. They put together, you know, nine Super Bowls in 18 years, one of the most dominating type of dynasties in sports history. Yet, if you look, they've had a 19-point margin in those five games. The biggest blowout that they've had in a Super Bowl win was a six-point win over Atlanta that they had to come from behind by 25. I mean, it was 3 points, 3 points, 3 points in the first three games. 4 points over Seattle when they were down by 10. They came back and won by four. And, you know, then they get the game 25-point comeback. So you know it's going to be close because it's the Patriots, and that's the way that they play. But, I mean, you go, it's like, okay, if Sue does this, if Tlaib does that, then the Rams will win. If Gurley does this, the Rams will win. But I think it's 50-50 right now.
John, you are still a Hall of Fame voter. I think everyone would agree, Tony Gonzalez, Ed Bailey, maybe even Champ Bailey, they're in. Give me a sleeper that you're really interested when you go into that room to hear them be presented that could sway you either way if you haven't made up your mind.
Well, Ed Reed, I think, would be the third. It could be a first ballot. Then after that, I'm hoping that we get one of the offensive linemen in because we've got four Hall of Fame offensive linemen. You know, Steve Hutchinson, Kevin Mawai, Alan Faneca, and Tony Boselli. We need one to get in because they're all holding each other back. I mean, sleeper could end up being maybe Isaac Bruce. If he can get into the 10, then I think he can maybe bolt right in. And it's not going to be easy because he's been waiting for so long. I think he can be a sleeper. Edgerrin James can be a sleeper. But, you know, I think it's going to be more of an offensive one than it will be anything else.
Good one. Great talk. Thanks for coming
Johnny,
on.
Before we let you go, I got to ask you, who's going to win?
I was going back and forth. Early in the week, I was going with the Rams. I did a Tony Boselli where I said the score – my score is going to be 30-27. His score was 28-24, and he didn't pick the team. I think it's going to be the Patriots.
Who picks against Belichick?
I was still waiting for
Brady.
Tony to make that call, even though he was 63% right in the play calls during the game.
That's right.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
Thank you, Johnny. Appreciate you, man. Say hello to Pat.
Thank you.
There's John Clayton, the Doug and Wolf NFL insider, joining us. Coming up next, we talk to Super Bowl. We talk Super Bowl with the Cardinals and NFL draft and the NFL. Boy, I just butchered all that. We're talking to Rashad Johnson next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
John.
John Clayton.
Yeah, I just finished my segment.
Denny Chimes has just called in to the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line.
Sean.
If you didn't hear the story we told a little bit earlier, we were talking yesterday about it seems like the Cardinals are going to flip back to getting good players who play the game with a high football IQ versus great athletes who sometimes then do the wrong thing. And when we were talking about it, I threw out the name Rashad Johnson. Wolf started talking about how important Rashad is to the or was to the Cardinals. And a listener tweeted Rashad and said, man, you got to come on with Doug and Wolf. And he tweeted back, of course, just call. So that only took a day, and he's right now joining us. Rashad, good morning. How's life?
Doing good, man. Good morning, you guys as well. How you all doing?
Oh, doing great, Rashad. Really appreciate you joining us right now. You want to be a coach, Rashad? Really?
Man, I guess, you know, I got bit by the bug, man. I can't let the game go.
Now, are you going to stay in Alabama as a coach? Because I heard you've also got a sideline gig, and I'm sure Paul Calvisi is very nervous about your ability to be a sideline reporter and take his gig with the Cardinals. Are you happy in Tuscaloosa, or are you kind of eyeballing Glendale a little bit and kicking Paul to the curb?
No, man, I never do that to Paul, man.
Okay.
Glendale's definitely a great place. You know, if it was my wife's decision, she would definitely have me in Arizona right now. But, you know, I always love that place. And, you know, any opportunity to come back would definitely be something we would talk about. But I'm happy here at Alabama.
Okay.
You know, I'm having a great time, you know, learning under Coach, you know, each and every, you know, week in the game planning of, you know, what we're doing here and just get an opportunity just to see it from the other side, see the day-to-day of how it works. You know, breaking down film, just doing all that, you know, the stuff that I did as a player, but, you know, kind of preparing it a little bit differently, not just getting the information and diagnosing it, but, you know, putting the information together on the front end and, you know, making sure we're making the right, you know, decisions on the front end. You know, it's a little bit different, you know, mm-hmm. than what I thought it would be, but it's fun.
Shad, I know that you've probably learned an awful lot, right? When you say coach, I bet you're talking about Nick Saban, right? Yep. You're talking about Saban. You've learned an awful lot.
The coach.
Of course, the coach. What is the one thing, what is your biggest takeaway from Nick Saban?
Oh, man, the details.
Really?
Details and the routine.
That is so Bill Belichick, Shad. I mean, that is Bill Belichick.
To the T. And, I mean, he sticks to it. He's just a guy that breeds details and breeds routine. I mean, it's hard to get him kind of out of it. And if you do, you better have a really good reason and a really good comeback to what he's gonna, you know, come back with. You know, we've been doing it, you know, this certain type of way, you know, things like that. But I mean, he's definitely open as well. But I mean, the details part of it is just something that you don't see anywhere else. Like I told my wife, you know, I got back here in August, you know, just after, you know, retirement. And sometimes, you know, guys, you know, it takes a little bit of time just to rock back from being away from the game. I've been playing football since I was five. So, you know, there is a little bit of, you know, just a shock value of like, man, I'm not doing what I love to do anymore, you know, at that level. And then, you know, when I got back in the building with him in August and just to see the consistency, you know, and the fire still burning in him, you know, to be, you know, as detailed and as routine and as forward driven as he was when I left there, you know, 10 years ago, I told my wife, like, man, it lit a fire back in me, you know, during that season that I really needed. So, I mean, Alabama's home, man, and it's been great to be back here and just be a part of the program and helping in the many ways that I'm able to help, you know, not only as a, you know, a coach, but, you know, not off the field coach, but, you know, off the field role, but as player development as well, man, I'm enjoying that part of it as well. Cause I've walked in these guys' shoes. So I'm being able to, you know, help them walk through this journey a little bit easier.
We're talking to Rashad Johnson, former Cardinal. And if you're new to the area and maybe you weren't here when Rashad played for the Cardinals, exactly what you're hearing now is how he played the game with that type of fire and passion. But Rashad, I'm wondering...
Intelligence.
Yeah, and intelligence. And that's where my next question is going. Even though you're in Alabama, if you were in the Cardinals personnel department and you were going to the combine, and you're with Steve Keim and you're talking to college football players, what would you do to test their football IQ? What would you do to test their football passion? How do you test the untestable in being able to try to know, is this guy a Rashad Johnson type of player?
Yeah, I think the passion part of it, the film should tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, you should be able to turn on that film, and the energy and the way he flies around, it shows. He's going to stand out if he's passionate about the game. You're not going to see those lows and those different plays here and there. That's what you got to believe. You can't look at the film and then sit down with a person and hear him talk a game to you and be like, oh, okay, you know, he sounds good. It's not, you know, the same thing I'm watching on film, but he has a good, you know, spin to what he's saying and believe what he's saying. I'm going to believe the film. That's where the passion part comes to it. And then just IQ, like, I'm going to ask each player that I come in that comes in and sits down with me, they're going to have to be able to give me, you know, just a day one install. Give me day one install of what you guys would do, you know, at Alabama, you know, on the first day. If you were to walk in, you know, base strong three auto check dot my, you're a corner, walk me through that. You know, what are the different variables of what that call means? And I need to know that. If he can't be able to, you know, talk me through that, then that lets me know that he may not be the guy that I need, because, you know, at the next level, it's not only, you know, just the skills and the precision of the players, man, but the IQ of those guys as well. You know, you're going against Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, you know, Aaron Rodgers. These guys know the coverage. They know where the ball is going. They're going to be, you know, a step ahead of everything that you did in college. And if you can't, you know, diagnose and speak the game and talk the language and understand the weaknesses of your defense, because those guys already know what it is. And if you don't know it already, then you're going to be a step behind and they're going to beat you every time. So that was my game, man. That's what helped me around for, you know, 8 years. And that's what fires me up, you know, to this day, to be able to help these younger guys be able to see the game, you know, totally different and just being an athlete out there playing, but knowing ahead of time that, you know, I'm in cover two. I know where my holes are. You know, he's going to hit me down the rail or hit me down the middle. You know, are they going to hit me with the run game? Because we're not, you know, seven-man box. So those type of things I know. So, I mean, you know, that's why I want you to have a step ahead of the game, man. And that's what these guys got to know.
So, as a player, of course, you had great success with Alabama and great success in the NFL. Do you have a preference when it comes to coaching as to where you'd like to coach?
Right now, I want to stay here at Alabama. I think, you know, just being away from home for the time that I was away, just having a little girl, you know, she's two. I think being able to be here and be rooted for a little bit of time, you know, years, I say, you know, 2-3 years. And then from there, you know, expand my wings, man, and just let them fly. Let, you know, kind of let, you know, the opportunities, you know, speak at will from there, and, you know, where my family's at and where we think we need to be at that point in time. But I think, you know, right now, settle in. Have an opportunity to impact here. Like I said, I love the roles that I'm in, man. I'm getting an opportunity to do some player development.
Very cool.
You know, some football, and I'm getting a chance to do some sideline work, you know, analyst work. So I'm getting a chance to really, you know, fully develop not only as a coach, but, you know, as a player and a person.
Shad,
so,
we don't need you doing any analyst work, okay? you don't need to do that, Shad. What are you talking about? You're a coach.
I'm enjoying the mic, man. I can't lie. I'm enjoying the sideline reporting. They shoot it down to me. You know, Rashad Wood just happened. I'm like, man, they were in cover three. They gave the two-shell look and rolled to the middle. You know, quarterback didn't have a chance. Deontay Thompson, you know, with his great range, and, you know, get to talk through it. It's exciting, man.
Oh,
keeps you close to the game.
Yeah. Rashad, don't be great at that job.
Rashad, don't tell your wife this, but Wolf's getting old. The Shot and Doug show in the morning doesn't sound like a bad idea. If you want to come back here, we'd be
that's right.
I like the Shot, Doug, and Wolf show.
Kick save and a beauty right there.
Shot, I have to ask you about Super Bowl 53 and your thoughts on Super Bowl 53.
Oh, man, you know, Tom Brady and Bill Belichick do it again. I mean, they're there at the pinnacle. I mean, it's hard to go against those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's where my chips would be if, you know, if I was placing any type of anything on it. But I'm definitely, you know, Tom Brady, he's been there before. These guys, you know, they just have a system of being able to know what they need to do, how to attack a team. They prepare well. You know, that's what I think, you know, the University of Alabama does. Well, kind of what you said, Belichick, Saban, they do really well. They go in, they watch the team, they see the team's weakness, and they're able to adapt. They're able to change what they do week to week to, you know, to attack the other team defensively, you know, or offensively. And I think they're going to do the same thing this week. You know, I think the Rams are a great, powerful, you know, explosive explosive team. The way that they can win is the way that, you know, the Patriots have lost is by the four-man rush. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the Rams have that. You know, they have Aaron Donald, Dominican Sue, some great guys up front that can rush this, the you know, up front and have, you know, a great defensive secondary as well. So it's going to be a good game, man. But at the end of the day, the Patriots are going to win another one. And, you know, Tom Brady's going to be back another year.
that's probably true. Rashad Johnson, former Cardinal and always a member of the Crimson Tide. I know that you just kind of jumped back in. But since you're already there, since the Cardinals have the number one pick in the draft, have you heard stories already out of Alabama from the coaches that you're around talking to some of the players? Is there somebody at Alabama that you would step up and say, boy, the Cardinals should draft this guy?
I mean, Quinnen Williams is a phenomenal football player. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy came on the scene this year. I got here, you know, in August, and there was just a little buzz of he was a good player, you know. And he didn't know the ceiling that he had. I mean, and this guy just, as the year went on, he just developed, and he's a smart football player. He's one of those guys that I said, you know, he can come off the field, he can talk about what just happened. Hey, man, I saw that guard with his hands. He's light on his hands. I knew he was pulling, so I knew I was getting the block back. And I'm like, man, this kid is a sophomore. So he has tremendous upside, man, and a really, really humble, young, just a great kid, man, great kid. I think he's, you know, he's worthy of, you know, being considered, you know, as that guy, the number one, you know, overall draft pick.
I love,
you know,
that endorsement.
Just because of how good of a guy he is and how much upside he has as a player.
Mm. Shot, how's the finger?
The thing is good, man. I still get Shot. Questions about it. And everybody wants to see it around here all the time. Bro.
You know, I want that. I wanted that to happen to me, Sean.
Listen, instant stardom forever, baby.
Listen, buddy. Love and respect to you and your family.
Thank you guys. Love you so much, man. Appreciate you having me on.
Man, that was great. Great talking to you. See you, Rashad. There is Rashad Johnson joining us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. You can go to Coulter Cadillac, Buick, GMC, Nissan, and Infiniti for your next new or pre-owned car. Man, to the listener that put that together, at Nathan Kropp, thanks. And to Maloney for tracking him down. We got to do that more often.
Yes.
You know what? And I'll tell you what, we should have asked Rashad this now. He's coming back on after the draft.
Yes.
You know what I mean? To talk about the Alabama players and maybe Quinnen Williams as a member of the Cardinals. Coming up next, rapid fire. You should see all the stories coming out of Atlanta, not about the Patriots and or the Rams, about everything else going on in the NFL.
Say what?
Yeah, say Kardashians. That's next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.